the corners of these dice cut into your palms a little. They didn't lay easy in your hand. These dice were fair and honest. These dice were cold and objective. These dice had no mercy. These dice had destroyed lives. This pair of dice was now gone. They were Bobby's masters. They felt good in his pocket.
I'm sure you recognize that voice. That's Penn Jillette. Chances are you know Penn as one half of the Masters of Magic Penn and Teller. Their innovative illusions have captivated audiences around the world, and their live show is the longest-running show in Las Vegas. But there's much more to Penn than the bullet catch trick. He's also a writer. Penn has published several books, including the New York Times bestseller, God, No! Signs You Already May Be an Atheist, and other magical tales. Penn's latest book is a novel called Random. It's a funny, suspenseful story about Las Vegas native Bobby Ingersoll. A few weeks before his 21st birthday, Bobby learns that he has inherited a large gambling debt from his father. After he pays off the debt, he takes a whole new approach to his life. Bobby chooses to let the rolls of his lucky dice make all of his life decisions for him. Penn joined us from his Sin City home to talk about Random and how he came up with the idea.
We were doing a television program in England, and someone that we were working with, I got to know her a bit. And one day, very oddly, she called me into a room alone, and she asked me if I'd read this book called The Dice Man, and I said no. She said, well, would you read it for me? So we had a few days off, so I picked up the book, and I read it, and I came back, and she called me to talk to her again privately and said, what'd you think of the book? And I said, well, it's silly. It's a, you know, it's essentially a satire of Est written in the 70s with a guy who comes up with this self-help theory of rolling dice for your decisions. And I said, you know, I didn't really like the book very much. I didn't like the comedic style of it. I don't really care for satire hardly ever. I like things sincere, but boy, that dice thing is pretty compelling. I said, I wonder if people live like that, because I read a few things that said that they had. She then opened a briefcase, because this was the early 90s. She opened a briefcase and pulled out these two gorgeous dice, kind of golden, at least golden color, and bejeweled. And said, I do this. And then I said to her, you took this job because of the dice. And she said, oh, yes. And I said, and are you, in any decisions that you're making on our TV show, are you using the dice? She said, only when I'm not sure.
Wow.
And so I just ran this story over and over in my head. And I pitched it to many people as a TV show, even sold it once. And then that deal fell apart because, you know, show business. And I told all my friends about it. And I will tell you, I will kind of answer the question before you ask it. I've never done it myself. I am such a all or nothing personality that I believe it would be too dangerous for me. I had two friends, perhaps interestingly, women, both of them, who I told them about. And they went through, both of them went through a tough time after that. And called me up and said, I'm just going to do dice for a while. And I went, well, I don't think you should. Tell me everything about it. And yeah. They had amazing experiences. They really mm-hmm. did.
Was there a temptation at all to use the dice to make decisions the way Bobby does? When you write, because when you're writing a novel, you have to make a ton of decisions.
Oh, well, I want to say yes, but the answer is really no. I rolled the dice so that all the rolls that you see in the story are roles that I actually made. And then I engineered the decisions and so on to fit the arc of the story I wanted to do.
Yeah, and you did it very well. I couldn't help, while I was reading Random, I couldn't help thinking of Philip K. Dick's book, The Man in the High Castle. You're familiar with it probably, and how he used the ancient Chinese text, the I Ching, to make decisions while he was developing the themes, the plot, and the story. And obviously that's not something you consider doing with Random, because if you were to do that, you would have done it with dice.
And also, you know, you have all the all the William Burroughs and all the beat poets who experimented with that, and certainly the Life in the Bush of Ghosts with Brian Eno and David Byrne. They did a lot of choices random, and also, and I've talked to David a little bit. He was also using veto power, which strangely enough, and I guess this is maybe where I cross over into me being insane part of the interview. I think with art, you want to use the veto power, but if you're doing it in life, you cannot give yourself that option. I mean, that might be backwards what many people would think. But for me, the people I talk to that live dice life, the important thing is when those dice hit, it instantly tells you what you're going to do. And what I also found fascinating as I wrote it and thought about it and felt it was how deeply programmed we are for religion. You may know that I'm a rather public atheist, but I'm fascinated by habit and by ritual. I mean, maybe one of the reasons I'm such a strong atheist is because all my leanings go toward religion. I really like to follow rules. I really like to follow patterns. I really like rituals. And it's very hard to knock me out of that. And that's one of the things writing this book that I found so seductive about that on both sides. Because on the side of doing what the dice say, you have this complete submission to, if you will, I'm using this obviously eccentrically, but to a higher power. It is about it being random and there being no destiny and there being no power, but acting as though there is. And that is that is to me the whole book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Very well said. You mentioned earlier that you like structure and order and everything. So I wonder, though, do you ever consider or think about the idea of living a more random lifestyle?
I have. I really have, and this whole book is me considering that and thinking about it. One of the important things about Bobby is, although he has and feels huge responsibilities to his family and to people that he loves, I've set it up so he has no responsibilities that are time dependent. The two women that I know that lived dice life for a few months, besides having the greatest sex stories ever, they also both had stories of not showing up for their job. One of them, who was in biotech, actually, she rolled the dice one Monday morning, did not go to work, and flew to the Caribbean. It took 4 days. And when she got back, she was sure she'd be fired. And in a very nutty thing, her boss said to her, "You know, I know you took 4 days and just went away, and I think it's because you work so hard and we don't appreciate you enough, so we're going to give you a little bit of a raise and a better job."
So it paid off well for her, yeah.
Yeah, but that shocked her. But for me, I am so aware that I made promises to tell her and promises to my family and promises to my coworkers that I couldn't live dice life in good faith and also keep my responsibilities in good faith. And I go through some serious acrobatics to make sure that Bobby can live dice life and still be moral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You do definitely do that. It's interesting. You mentioned a while back earlier in our talk that you pitched Random to Hollywood. You pitched it as a TV show with this theme, and one network kind of sort of bought one version. But as you say in the end of the book, there's nothing more random than Hollywood. But you're a magician and a cultural phenomenon. You can't just make it happen, can you?
No,
because it really should be a series.
Well, you know, now that the book's out, strangely enough, some of the same people that forgot that I talked to them about this have come to me and said, "Wow, this could be interesting." And I go, okay. Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm really interested in a TV series that would be open-ended, because as I finish the book, I'm really, really interested in what Bobby does with the next 10 years of his life, because he will continue to live random, I believe. And I want to see what happens. And I don't think I'm going to write a sequel. So I want someone else to do that. And if you get a TV show, you get really brilliant showrunners. I'm not really a teller. I am not a television writer. And I would love to see what someone with those skills would do with this.
I couldn't help but think about the Martin Mull song, "I Haven't the Vaguest Idea." And in the song, he calls it the craziest dot on the map. You've lived in Las Vegas for what? I think 28 years, 29 years now?
Yeah.
How did Las Vegas serve as a creative muse to Random? Or did it? It must have.
I don't think I would have written it at all the same way in New York. I mean, I believe that if I had the idea for Random, I would have thought that setting it in Las Vegas was much too on the nose if I didn't really know Las Vegas. I think I would be offended if a person had that idea and set it in Vegas and didn't live in Vegas for a long time. Because I think if you were a tourist to Vegas and you were writing this book, you would set it on the Strip and in the casinos. I wrote a lot of the first part of the book sitting in the Starbucks on Fremont Street with the Kiss impersonators and the people who get kicked in the nuts for money and the magicians all working on Fremont Street. And every time outsiders show Vegas, they show, you know, the MGM Grand, and they show the Bellagio, and they show that. But Fremont Street has this kind of a combination of a county fair and a meth lab that that just walks up and down the street, and it's street performers, and it's a level of weird chance that that doesn't happen on the Strip. So I think that if I hadn't discovered that there's a world of Las Vegas that's not the Strip, I would have considered it too on the nose, but I hope that people reading this will see that the Vegas that I show is perhaps a little different than the Vegas they've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very well said. Some of those Fremont scenes are among my favorite parts of the book, although everything in the book is great. Do you see a connection between writing novels and performing magic? Do they have something in common?
The funny thing is that my first goal in life was to be a writer, not to be a performer. That's what I really wanted. And I just found, I mean, this is such a strange thing to say, but I found that I had a certain kind of ability in performing that people reacted to, and I really, really liked it. So, you know, my sister, who I was very, very close to and who was much, much older than me, she was 23 years older than me. So she saw me in almost an aunt or even a grandmother position growing up, and of course saw Broadway and saw all the shows leading up to Broadway and saw my juggling shows at talent shows when I was a child, would always say to me, "You never seem more satisfied and more yourself than after you finish writing something or when you're playing bass behind someone else and not in the lead." And she said, that's always where you seem to me the most natural in the pen that I know. Had I not met Teller and started, you know, the most interesting conversation of my life, had I not met Teller, the chances of me having gone into magic were zero. I didn't even care for magic. So the conversation with Teller is kind of all that magic is to me. Everyone else in magic, and I think I can say that almost that globally, everyone else in magic got obsessed with the magic side of magic at the age of like 11 or 12. I hated that. I did not like it. I did not like magic. I did not like the make-believe of magic. I did not like the lying of magic. And it was only when Teller told me that magic was essentially intellectual, more than the other art forms. Music hits your body, poetry hits your body, comedy hits your body, but magic really hits your mind. Those other things do as well, but magic leads with that. Magic leads with it only exists if you know what's impossible. That's not true for music. So that's what interests me in magic. And what interests me also in magic is the ability to tell the truth while lying. And in magic, of course, that is not the subtext, that's the text. But in novels especially, writing is really that. The entire thing is a lie. The entire thing didn't happen. And yet you are drilling down deeper than you can in essays to what the truth is as you see it, you know? And in that way, the telling a lie to get to the truth, and I'm using truth here very, very broadly to mean what I believe in my heart and not any sort of objective truth. So please allow me that odd definition for that.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And that's great. You started out wanting to be a writer and then you became a performer, but you're still a writer. And thank God that you met up with Teller and you had that conversation with him.
Yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't say thank God. Sorry about the thank God.
You could say thank random chance and you'd be exactly
thank random
right.
chance. That's yeah. For that conversation. And thank you for writing my material for me, Penn. It's much better than what I come up with. Penn Jillette, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank
you. Such a pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on Random.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Penn Jillette is the author of the novel Random. He's also one half of the magicians extraordinaire and kings of Sin City, Penn and Teller. You don't have to roll a lucky 7 to find out more about Penn and Random. Just head over to wpr.org/beta.
If there's any unifying theme through the stories, often it's the relationships between family members and friends and ex-boyfriends.
Coming up, Ling Ma on her hallucinatory, surreal short story collection Bliss Montage. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.